Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Thursday. It is the 15th of April, 2021. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, because it's Thursday, I have the one and only Dr. Mac. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Kelly. Would the 15th of April be the Ides of April?
I think so.
I mean, if the 15th of March is the Ides of March, I don't know. I'm asking, but...
I don't know. Well, I don't know what made it the Ides in the first place, so I don't know if it was that it was the 15th or not. So, I don't know. If you know, listeners, observations at macobserver.com, and we will be happy to highlight that on a future show. I guarantee it, because now that you've asked that, I'm legitimately curious, and I do want to know. So, in the meantime, I would like to talk to you about something that I know that you know about, and that is external storage.
Yes, or replacing a startup disk. I actually wrote a column giving advice for both, because it's a little different.
That's
so
true.
There's kind of like, the way I see it, there's like three different situations where you might be shopping for a disk. Mm-hmm. Replacing an existing disk, usually a boot disk. Yeah. Expanding your storage, which would be, adding more space so that, like, when your iTunes or music library gets too big, you put it on an external disk. That's the second. The third is disks for backup. Mm-hmm. And there's slightly different advice for each category. So if you're going to ever boot from it, you want to spend the money to get a solid state drive.
Yes. A solid state drive or a flash drive, SSD is usually what you see for that.
You must, because... for the past few generations, macOS has been optimized for optical media, for digital media, not for magnetic media. And so a spinning hard disk, if you haven't booted from one and tried to work lately, it's like going to work in a pool of molasses.
It really is. It's sort of, I get the handicapping vibe, you know, when they handicap a horse by putting like a blanket of lead weight. So that, you know, everybody evens out. Like, that's what it feels like, is like you're working with that sort of lead blanket on you.
Well, everything you do just takes forever. And, and you know, if you get used to most Macs today come with, I think all Macs today come with a solid state boot disk. So you get used to it. And if you try to revert because you need a bigger disk, mm-hmm. and you can't afford a bigger SSD, you'll be really sorry if you're going to try to boot from it and, you know, do work.
And do anything of consequence.
It's not so bad if it's like your clone. Although right. if you have to use it for more than an hour or two, you'll wish you had bought an SSD.
That's true.
I finally broke down and bought an SSD to do my nightly clones on.
Yeah.
Even though I'm cheap, it was worth it.
Yeah. Well, because if you need it, it totally becomes handy. And the other thing to know about this is that it's not necessarily the age of your machine. It's the operating system. So we're not talking about in the last few years of Mac hardware. We're talking about the last few years, Mojave and Catalina and Big Sur. That's what we're talking about. So
yes, each one has been more and more
optimized for flash storage.
For digital storage rather than optical. I mean, rather than magnetic. And the thing is, each iteration gets worse on magnetic media. So
yeah, it's harder.
I had to run Big Sur from a magnetic media because I didn't have a clone, and I was working on a book. And this was when it was in beta, and I think it's probably better now, but it was really bad. it's taking like 5 minutes to do everything. I could go get coffee while the spinning wheel. And that was on, 16 gig machine. So it wasn't that I was lacking memory. It was that the storage system is so darn slow. All right. So moving right along.
Yes.
Let's assume that your SSD is booting your Mac and you're perfectly happy there. But you are, hang on a second. But you are running out of room on your hard disk, now, on your internal boot disk, right? Your internal SSD. So if you've got a 512 gigabyte disk and you've got 480 gigabytes of stuff in it, you're pushing your luck, because the fuller it gets, the slower things will get. And there is a point where it will just lock up. If you get it too full, there's not enough room for a swap file, and it will crash, maybe kernel panic, but it's not pretty and you don't want to go there. Plus, before really that happens, it gets slow.
Yeah, it's and like you'll notice, like, wow, it's taking forever to open a window, to save a file, to whatever you're doing. Yeah, you'll notice. So
if that happens, check to see if you have enough space. I say you need at least 10 or 15% free space. Mm-hmm. And I start to worry when I get down to about 25%. Mm-hmm. Because you never know when you're going to get one or two big files that's going to fill everything up. And then that's the end.
Yep.
Right. And then you're hosed.
That's actually part of my day job. One of the things that we monitor is the free space on hard drives. And when it gets to 10%, I get an email. And so
that's a good rule of thumb there is 10% is time for attention.
Yes.
And even at 20%, you might start thinking, what could I do without on this disk? And the thing is, it's really easy to find a couple of really big things that you can move to external storage, namely your music and photos libraries. Mm-hmm.
Now,
are usually two of the bigger things that you would have on your disk, mm-hmm. and there's some benefit to storing them externally, and there's some drawback. I mean, if you've got a laptop, that means that you don't have your pictures and music with you,
right?
But if you have iCloud, you do, so you might not need all that on your
boot disk. I will tell you two things that make it a little easier to manage storage than it used to be. The first of which is you can go to the Apple menu and choose About This Mac, and it'll show you your the specs on your machine. And then from there, you'll see storage. There's some tabs across the top if you haven't looked at the About screen in a while. So you'll see some tabs across the top of your across the top of your screen of the little About window. So it'll say, you know, macOS Catalina or Big Sur or whatever you're running. We don't judge. And it'll say Overview, Displays, Storage, Support, and Service. And if you click on Storage, it'll show you how much of your hard drive is free. And then it will give you a Manage button, and it will give you some easy ways that you can knock out some stuff. So I'll tell you right now, for most people, if you look down the left-hand side of that window, you'll see that it says GarageBand Instruments, and you may not even know you have GarageBand installed on your computer. So you can go ahead and remove those, and it's going to save you like a gig and a half or 2 gigabytes of space immediately. And you will never, ever know.
Anymore. Now it says Music Creation.
Oh, Music Creation. Okay, well, it's still GarageBand. Yeah, and so GarageBand's on your computer.
I was just thinking, wow, that's weird because I have GarageBand in every instrument. No, but I have 8.22 gigabytes of Music Creation.
Okay, so yeah, if
I'm
you go
guessing
to...
that's the...
That might be Big Sur because it used to just say GarageBand on it.
That's what I'm thinking, if it's the
Music Creation, then if you
click on that, it's your... when you click on that, it's your Apple Loops... And your instrument library. If you don't use GarageBand, you don't need either.
Right. And you will never miss them.
8 gigabytes right there.
It'll save you a bunch of space, depending what you have installed. So that's one thing you can do. And the other thing that you can do is...
From that same screen.
Oh, no, I wasn't. Right. From there, you can review all kinds of other things, but that's like a gimme because most people aren't using GarageBand is what I have found.
Yes.
The other thing that you can do is if you open a Finder window, when you look at a Finder window and go, if you click on the View menu at the top of the screen, you can say Show Status Bar, and that will put a little bar at the bottom of every one of your Finder windows, and it will show you how much space is available on your hard drive.
So I always forget to tell people that because mine is the first thing I do on my Macs is turn that on so I know how much space is left on in every window. It's a, it's one of those things you should just file away when you see that it's not there.
It's very handy to have it available so that you can see because then it's in front of you kind of all the time and it's just sort of osmosis knowledge almost because you just look at it all the time so you know like. You know, that used to say 25 and now it says 4. I should pay more attention. You know, yeah. So
and here's a bonus. It's clickable and draggable. You can drag windows from the bottom now. If you're an long time Mac user, it didn't used to be that way. You used to have to grab them right in the title bar or they didn't move. Now you can grab them really on any edge now and move them. Maybe not on the right or left edge, but on the bottom.
The top and the bottom will work if you have the status bar
and on,
enabled.
And on, not in the sidebar.
Yeah. But the
top of the sidebar.
But you get the status bar gives you an additional place to drag the window around if you decide to
yes.
do it. So yes. that's pretty great.
That's a bonus.
Yeah.
So. And the path bar I like also because that shows me where which folder I'm in mm-hmm. at a glance rather than being in a folder called documents and wondering if it's on this disk or that disk.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So or if it's in my user folder or somewhere else.
Yeah.
Anyway, so adding storage, moving right along. Boy,
yes. Boy, well, that's how to manage the storage that you have. So I just want to point out, like, that's why I want to point it out is, you know, before if you're you worried have to go about
buy something,
yeah, if you're worried about how much you have, there are two easy things that you can do to be more aware of it and help clean up what you've got now. So if you do that and it still doesn't work and you decide you need to buy some more storage, Bob is here to help.
Then, yeah, then I recommend, here's the thing, depending on the size of what you want to put on that external drive, if you can afford an SSD, you'll be much happier when using music or photos if your library Absolutely. Resides on an SSD. For any other kind of data, I mean, if you do page layout and you've got these giant page layout files that you need to archive, a rotational magnetic disk is fine. You can get a much bigger disk for a lot less money. But if this is something where you're going to be using that stuff all the time, you might want to have it on an SSD so it will open and save much faster.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a matter of budget. Most of my archive and online storage disks are still magnetic, but I'm gradually moving to anything that I use frequently is moving on to an SSD. I need to buy one more and I can do music and photos.
Okay.
So over time, you know, it's not urgent, but over time, I really would like that. I don't use photos that much, but when I open it, it's excruciating to try to do anything. All right. So finally, the third category is backup disks.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the rant comes in. So people say to me, what kind of disk do you recommend? And I say, I buy the disk that's on sale.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's only like three disk manufacturers I've heard of. So they're all from people, you know, they're all from reputable companies. Mm-hmm. So I buy whatever I can get on sale. Why? Because they're all going to fail. People say, well, wait, I just bought a disk that's got a mean time between failures of 1,000,000 hours. And I say, that's great. That means that some disk, not yours necessarily, might last 1,000,000 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And that all the other disks are either going to last less or more. And it doesn't say how much less or more.
Right.
But trust me, a lot of them aren't going to make it to the 1,000,000 mile mark.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that kind of information is good, I guess, as a guideline.
I think so, because really it gives you an idea of about how long you can probably get out of it. See, right.
Like, I put no stock in it because I have disks that fail the first year. They are covered by warranty.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't cover your data.
Right. So, but I mean, like, if you have something that says MTBF is 200 hours and you have something that says MTBF is 2000 hours. In general, you are probably going to get more life out of that second disk. That's all I'm saying. But
these days they all have big, you know, 200,000 hours and up. So it's not really a big deal. But the thing I try to tell people is you can't trust that if you go into Mm-mm. it believing that you're buying a disk that's going to last a 1,000,000 hours before it fails.
Yeah, you are incorrect.
So here's the thing. Everything gets backed up three times. This is where redundancy becomes your friend, because the only thing you can rely upon is that the disk is going to fail.
Right.
You can't rely on it lasting a certain amount of time, and mm-hmm. you can't rely on the manufacturer replacing your drive.
Right.
Because they're not going to replace your data, and that's what's important.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just figure the cheapest drive is the best one because I'm going to buy a couple. Mm-hmm. And everything gets backed up to at least two or three places. I mean, mm-hmm. the more important it is, the more places it gets backed up to.
And I will say another thing that you can do, because this is a thing that I think is helpful, you know, because yes, your hard drive will fail. Whatever hard drive it is, it's going to fail. I hope that's not news. But the thing to keep in mind now is that there are a lot of monitor options available, so you can find out your drive is failing and not your drive has failed.
DriveDX mm-hmm. is what I've been using, and it gives you a lot of warning, but if you're not familiar with it, it could freak you out because it does give warnings that, and because of what I do, I always let them go until they actually fail. So I always, I'm very interested when it tells me I've got three urgent errors. How long will it be before that disc actually dies? Mm-hmm. And a lot of them go for a long time before they fail. But it is, there are apps like that, and Drive DX, I think, is just one of them, but that will give you some, that I get emails that tell me that there's, you know, bad sectors on a disc, or that a disc had failed one of its, whatever they call those tests. Mm-hmm. And that's good, but I still don't put a ton of faith in it. And I don't throw away a disc when it starts getting error messages because half the time they go away. So here's the thing. I heard Dave say this on Mac Geek Gab, track the number of bad sectors. If you get some, that's not necessarily the end of the world.
It's not.
No. But if the number keeps going up, you've got a problem that's going to bite you in the hind portions pretty quick. So when you start seeing the number of bad sectors rising, you might want to either reformat the disc or maybe even retire it.
It's a thing to check.
Or give it to someone you hate.
So there's something. There are a lot of things that will monitor what's called smart status.
Yes.
And smart status is self-monitoring, analyzing, and reporting technology, I think.
Yes.
It's been a while. Some of my drive knowledge is a little dusty, but I think that's it. And so a lot of hard drives ship with this, and a lot of technology can read the smart status of a drive. So I think iStat menus has a smart status option that you can have. So if nothing else, it'll tell you like something is happening. And so that's a good way to get information. So, you know, I don't know if there's a way to monitor bad blocks
in default.
You have to configure everything in iStat menus to make sure that it's actually monitoring stuff.
It also will monitor your free space on all those disks and warn you when you get to a certain point, which I do that. Mm-hmm. I have configured, and that's very good.
Yeah.
Very
and there useful. Are, there are a lot of other utilities that will monitor smart status. If you know people using Windows machines, if you have a Windows machine that you use, again, we don't judge, but you may want to find something that will monitor the smart status on that so that you can make sure that you are that you're aware of the status of your hard drive. It doesn't matter if it's good or if it's bad. It matters that you know what it is, because if you know it's going,
you can decide.
Yeah, if you know it's going, that's when you start clocking prices on hard drives, because you know it's going to need to be replaced. And you know, if everything's humming along, it's fine.
No, more importantly, that's when you start making sure that things are redundant. Mm-hmm. You know, because that drive is going to disappear pretty quick.
Yeah.
So that's when you back up to the cloud. Speaking of the cloud, I do want to add one more thing for those out there who don't want to take my word for it on that MTBF stuff or like to research that stuff obsessively. There's this Backblaze, which is my favorite online backup service, which we've talked about it.
Yes.
They track the failure rates for the 160,000 plus magnetic media hard drives they have in service. And quarterly, they release the report.
Yeah.
And they release both the raw data and their, you know, like top line analysis. Mm-hmm. So
I love reading those.
I read it too. And I ignore it when I go shopping because all I care about is what's on sale. But it is interesting. It's fascinating because some drives fail at a much higher rate than others. But with that many drives in service, you can see that most of the drives of that type don't fail, you know, for years. And wow, you know, the difference is small when you really think about it. It's not like many drives fail in any great numbers, or you can avoid a drive. There are a couple that are dogs.
Yeah,
but you can easily see that from the numbers. If they test enough units and the failure rates in the 5 or 10% in the first year rate, you go, I'm not going to buy any of those.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, I try to ignore those figures, other than to try to figure out if there's a way that, you know, I can use them to predict when my drives are going to fail.
Yeah, and like it's
never going to happen.
It's just sort of a nice yardstick, by and large. The ones that have the longer life,
MTBFs,
may possibly give you longer life. Yeah.
Well, and they actually measure it. So they will tell you they've got, you know, 14,000 of this model, an 8 terabyte Seagate something with the model number. And you can see that, you know, 0.03% of them have failed.
Yeah.
That's like, wow, okay, that's, I guess that's good, isn't that? That's very good.
Yeah.
But I don't think it matters because the one you get may or may not last that long. You know, some of them failed early. Yeah. And yours could be one of those.
Right.
So it's all a matter of, I don't know, you know, I've had really good luck buying whatever was on sale. And I buy raw drives. This is a whole different, I'm going to write another column about toasters because I have the OWC toaster. I buy naked drives, cheap as I can, formatted for PCs. And I have drives here that are, I don't know, 7 or 8 or 9 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is good luck.
And a couple of them are still, yeah, a couple of them are still going. But, you know, when they get to be a certain age,
yeah,
I retire them from active duty and they become like a backup of a backup of a backup and an archive. And I throw them in every once in a while because you need to spin up these disks about once or twice a year, I think, to keep the Earth's magnetic thing from causing what they call bit rot.
Yeah.
So, you know, I spin them up every once in a while, and a couple of them are, I think, probably 8 or 9 years old. Nothing important on them anymore, but they still spin.
Yeah. It's good to know. Yeah. So that's a lot of hard drive information.
Where do you buy your hard drives when you buy a disk?
Whoever will give me the best deal, basically. Yeah. But I usually go into it knowing, like, I'm buying this one. So yeah, the last round was Iron Wolf drives. Yeah, Iron Wolf drives. Because I put them in the NAS, and so I want their Seagate Iron Wolf. And so I don't remember. It was multiple terabytes. I just don't remember how many, but kind of nailed down that one and like knew it was getting to be time to upgrade and then just waited.
And that's a commodity. You can look anywhere and somebody's going to be selling them cheaper than the next guy.
Yeah. Cause I can, you know, I can get it for, you know, $150 or $200. Cause it was like an 8 terabyte drive or something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, then I just sort of watch and then try to strike a balance between how hard do I think this drive is going to fail and how much do I want to pay for that mistake if I get it wrong. So, it's just sort of a matter of doing that. But also, like, I have the luxury because I have a NAS unit that lives in my utility closet here.
That's network attached storage for those of you out there that aren't acronym savvy. Okay.
Network attached storage is basically a box that holds a bunch of hard drives that hangs off your network and is just storage. So I use it for Time Machine backups and Mr. Kelly uses it for Time Machine backups for his machine as well. And the shared iTunes situation all lives out there in the NAS. And so what happens is if one of those drives goes bad, I can pull it out and then put in a new drive and then it will sort of rebuild the index. And so like if one drive goes down, I'm not completely hosed. All my data is still safe. So
is it a Synology?
No, I have a QNAP.
Okay. I was going to say, I know the Synologies let you have a hot spare.
Yes.
So you can put in, you can install an extra drive. And if one of them happens to fail, it just goes into its routine without you.
Yeah. It just goes, I've got this other drive. We'll just do that. It's great.
I think I'm going to get a NAS one of these days.
I look forward to helping you shop for it. Maybe we'll talk about it here on the show. In the meantime, that's going to do it for us today, though. So Bob, as always, thank you so much for coming by.
My pleasure.
I'm glad you're here.
As always.
And I am your host, Kelly Gamont. I would love to hear from you if you have more questions for Bob, questions for me, questions about the show. You can get a hold of us at observations@macobserver.com, TMO Daily on Twitter, or by leaving comments in the show notes. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.